Welcome to Inspiration at Work, where you will hear from business leaders from around the world on what they are doing at work and through work to make the world a better place. This is the most positive talk radio show on the planet, where we have evicted the tenets of cynicism and criticism and set up residence on Inspiration Boulevard, right in the heart of Atlanta, Georgia. And now, your host, America's Chief Inspiration Officer, Terry Barber.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining us today at Inspiration at Work. And Tamara, I am so glad to have you back in the studio.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It's going to be a great day.
It is going to be a great day because we choose to make it so. But it also helps that we've got great guests in our studio with us today. Mr. Gary Jones, who is now the Chief Human Resource Officer at the Grizzard Communication Group. And we're going to hear from Gary in just a minute. But first, I have to tell you, it's a special day because we get to welcome a brand new sponsor for Inspiration at Work, our friends at Wealth Enhancement and Preservation of Georgia Financial Planning Service. Love these guys. I can actually say and speak for their high integrity and their credibility and their performance only because, yes, my wife and I are clients. So I can totally 100% endorse them. So we're excited to have them a part of our program as our sponsor. Tamara, tell me about your health, please.
Oh, thank you. I caught that cold that everybody else had in the beginning of the month, and I am just raring to go now. All is well.
Yeah. Well, did you do anything special to get over it?
You know, I did something that I think is the hardest thing to do, and that is rest. I think a lot of us just don't know how to just turn it off and just do that. And that's what I did and took care of myself.
Well, good for you. Good. That's a good word of counsel, maybe a little point for inspiration for those who are not quite up to par. Hey, Tamara, you know, you and I would not be sitting here today were it not for our guest.
So true.
So we have him to blame, thank for that. And we're going to talk more about that. But I wish, in light of the fact that you have even a longer standing relationship with Gary than I wish you'd give just our listeners a little bit of background on Gary.
Well, I'll tell you how I met Gary, and that was many years ago. He and I met in a business setting when he was the VP of HR with Pike Family Nurseries, and we were having conversations about what's on his plate, what keeps you up at night in HR, and he was just so kind to be able to have those conversations, particularly for me at the time when I was learning a lot about HR, and helped me have a better understanding. But going forward, we've done quite a lot together. We've played golf.
What kind of golfer is he, since I've never seen him play?
Actually, he's a pretty good golfer, just to let you know right now. Yes, you are. And we're colleagues. We've worked at Sherman Lana together. We both volunteer for that. Gary has put in some tremendous amount of leadership for the Sherman Lana organization, and is on the board of directors, has helped with the board of directors, and just serves where he can help us shine.
Well, you know, now that we have completely exhausted ourselves in our content talking about Gary, let's talk to Gary. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Terry. It's great to be here with you and Tamara. Big fan of your book and what you're doing.
Thanks, Gary. I appreciate that. I didn't even set him up for that. But I'm grateful. And I have to tell you that there are a lot of things that I could really say that I love about you, because you know that you are a dear friend. But one of the things that I most respect and love about you is your joy and your enthusiasm for your work and for life itself. So I want to begin our conversation today and just have you talk about, from whence does that kind of inspiration come for you?
Well, you know, I've really been privileged through the years to work with great people and for great people. People who took risks, giving me opportunities to work really at the cutting edge of human resources. and people who appreciated the efforts. And so it's kind of been that really nice circular loop of performing and then being rewarded and encouraged and inspired and giving the chance to inspire other people.
Well, I can testify to the fact that you do that. I love the fact for the few years that we did work together, it was always a joy to go by your office. You were always on top of your game, always enthusiastic. I don't know if your wife and your family are listening. Maybe they could tell us otherwise, but as far as we know, this is really who you are.
They will be listening as soon as I tell them about that comment.
Hey, the other thing, though, that I think is really fun about who you are is your hobby.
Yes, I have several of them.
But the one that is really, to me, of most interest is your music hobby. Tell us a little bit about what you do on the side for
fun.
It
started a long time ago when I was about 12 years old, and my brother walked in with an old beat-up acoustic electric guitar. I had never taken a lesson. I had never told anyone I wanted to learn how to play. In fact, I didn't know I wanted to learn how to play. And I started plunking around on that old thing and then taking some lessons, and it's been really a lifelong joy to learn how to play and just to express myself through music. So for me, that's hobby number one.
But you have a group also, right, that you play with?
I do. I'm with Brightwater. It's a variety band. We do weddings, country clubs, that kind of thing. And our sweet spot is classic rock, some of the oldies. About the time Tamara was born, probably.
Well, dancing music. I remember that.
That's right, dancing music.
Well, that's really neat. And I love the fact that you're involved in social media on a regular basis. I follow you on Twitter. You have to tell people your Twitter handle.
It is Gary S. Jones, S-P-H-R. The S-P-H-R is there because there's more than one Gary S. Jones on Twitter.
Well, anyway, that's one way that people can reach out and find you, maybe even talk to you about your music, about what you're doing there. That would be fun. But we're here to really talk about what you're doing at work and through work that's making the world a better place. And I'd love to have initially this conversation in and around one of, I think, our mutually favorite topics is culture.
Absolutely.
And Gary, I talk to us a little bit, first of all, just about your perspective and your conviction about culture at work and how and why that's so important relative to the business goals.
Sure. Well, I think it starts by looking at where we spend our time. I mean, we spend more time at work than we do with our families or significant others. To really maximize that time for ourselves and for our employers, we need to be having a good time. We need to be doing something that we enjoy doing. We need to be appreciated for the contributions that we're making in our products and services. And to me, the way that you get at that is through culture, creating that kind of welcoming environment where people really want to show up and engage and give their best.
Well, I know there's been a lot of publicity as of late, and especially with Tony Heiss's book, In and Around Happiness, and the culture that they have created at Zappos is a great one to look to. But, I mean, what are some of those attributes that you look to in a culture at work and you would look at and say, that's a good culture?
You know, I think it starts with a sense of fit, because there are so many cultures out there and variations of cultures in the workplace. And, you know, one size does not fit all. And so finding a place that is right for me. And, you know, I've joined organizations and left organizations because I thought they were a fit or not a fit. And there were others who stayed behind and thought it was a wonderful fit for them. So I kind of look at maybe three or four questions when I'm looking at culture and determining whether or not it's a fit. And I guess one of those is, do I believe in what the company's doing? You know, at the end of the day, can I take pride in what the company is producing for itself, its clients, its customers? And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's manufacturing or services, no difference whatsoever. At the end of the day, do I believe in the outcome? Do I believe in the product that we're producing? And do I believe that what I do makes a difference in making that product or service better? You know, if those two things are there, then I have pride in what I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I go home feeling like I have made a difference. And then I think the third part of that is, do I feel appreciated for what I do? And appreciation comes in a lot of ways. It's not just about a paycheck, although most of us like that a lot. It's about the intangible things in the workplace, the smile that others give you when you come into a room, the way they seek you out for your advice and counsel. And so all of those things kind of roll together to me in determining, you know, is this a good place to be? Because I think it's so subjective. Each of us bring our own lenses to that.
And I have a question about that because, as you know, I coach executives in transition, and you know, there's the parameters of, are, is a person technically proficient for the position? Is it something that they really want to do and they believe in? But then the other part is, are they a good fit for the organization? How, if when a person's assessing a company, what kind of, how do they know? How do you get to the culture? What are the kind of questions that they might ask to learn about the culture of an organization?
That's one of the hardest things to get to in an interview process, because culture is often elusive. And when you ask someone to describe their workplace culture, they may not be able to tell you because they're so into it that they can't see it and define it. So what I try to do is do a fair amount of research on companies that I might be interested in and just see what's out there. You know, if they're famous for not treating people well, if they're famous in the newspaper articles about lawsuits and class actions, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I'm looking for positive attributes. So I want to see what's out there publicly. But then I want to talk to as many people who know that organization, either as customers, clients, or preferably people who work there. And so when I interviewed, for example, at Pike, and when I interviewed at Grizzard, I was trying to talk to as many people as I could in that interview process with questions like, tell me what it's like to work here. Tell me what your clients say about you. What are the most significant things this company does to recognize achievement? Things like that that get people talking, because I think the answers, you really find the answers to culture not in their first response, but in their second and third sentences when they're describing their workplace.
Well said. You know, it's really interesting because in the day that we live in, there is no such thing as behind the curtain anymore.
That's right.
Everything's out in the open. I recently came across a website I thought was pretty fascinating. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's called screendoor.com. And it's where employees from around the world go in and tell dirty laundry stories on their employer. It is absolutely hysterical to read some of the things. And it's about some of the brands that would, quite frankly, be rather shocking to you to pick up on. So, you know, your diligence in pursuing what's behind that curtain now is probably easier to do than it ever was before.
And it's all public. Whether it's public or not, it's all public. You know, the ads, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. No, it doesn't. It's on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and everywhere else. And it's the same with our corporate behavior. And so we very quickly gain reputations by those who used to work for us, those who used to be clients, as well as those who currently.
Really interesting kind of perspective. It's a nice segue to the next set of part of our conversation, because we are really accustomed, especially in the old way of doing business, to make sure that the external perception about who we were, who we are, what was pristine, and it was everything that was upbeat and positive, and then what happened on the inside didn't really matter. So talk to us a little bit, Gary, when those two things come in conflict with one another, what happens and how do you get that resolved?
Well, I think, you know, as you said, everything is public. People see, people know, people hear. And I think the important thing for organizations who are trying to build that trust and integrity is to be upfront. You remember the Johnson & Johnson Tylenol scare from a decade or so ago. The best thing they ever did was get on TV, look straight into the camera and say, we messed up. We had a quality control issue. We care about you. Your lives are important to us. We're going to fix this and make it right. You know, people are people, and they understand that organizations are people, and organizations make mistakes just like we do as coworkers, friends, family. And to the extent that we fess up and we say, we could have done better than this, and our commitment is we will do better than this the next time around, I think it goes a long way. And then, of course, it's up to walking that walk and proving the sincerity of your words.
Any good leading kinds of guidelines or tips that you could provide that would help organizations get their employees to live the brand, that would live the promise and deliver on what and who they say they are?
Well, I think it has to start at the top. It has to start with executive leadership, carefully defining what that brand is, what the culture is of that organization. And again, that's going to vary from company to company. So what's important to you? What's important to your company? And then very clearly and forcefully communicate that. Build it into the life and fabric of what you're doing. For example, our cultural values are built into the performance review. They're built into the position descriptions. They're built into the 360 reviews that we do. They're built into the merit increases we give. They're built into the bonuses or other incentive payment that we give. And they're built into the awards and acknowledgments that we give. So it's pretty seamless. It's integrated. So people are clear that it's not just do you get the work done acceptably. It's also about how you get the work done. And are you a Grizzard team player? Are you in this heart and soul? And, you know, we're at the point now at Grizzard that we make hiring decisions based on that. You know, so we looked at some candidates a couple of weeks ago, and the hiring manager said to me, I really like candidate A, but they're just not going to fit with our culture, and we should go with candidate B.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, that's when you know
that's
you've integrated the culture into the workplace.
Have those same kind of values also contributed to what you're looking at in terms of metrics?
They have, and I think the metrics, again, start with the establishing of those high cultural standards and communicating them with great clarity. And once you have done that, then organizations shouldn't be bashful or shy about overtly stating that every associate lives up to those. They are non-negotiable cultural values. So you might have a wonderful associate, very talented, skilled, who doesn't fit. And the organization owes it to itself and to that associate to either help them find a way to fit or to help them see they don't fit and to go somewhere where they can be happy and productive in a culture that's more suited for them. So once that is done, I think that it's really important to invest in the managers as coaches. Managers are cultural coaches as much as they are task coaches. Hmm. And to the extent that associates feel like their managers care for them and invest in them and invest in their success, not just in how they do the job and how much of the job they do, that's an important metric. Around. So if you can measure that in terms of attitudes toward managers around coaching, around development plans, et cetera. What I look for is that sense of an associate saying, my manager really cares if I succeed. Mm. To me, that's the most important metric of all for culture.
Wow. That's a great standard by which to live by. And if that's really going on across the board in business today, that appears to be a radical shift from the days gone by.
It is. You know, we've all read the history of how managers might walk out on the floor and issue some kind of edict without an explanation of the why, what, or how that was important. And associates were just expected to do it. My, how the world has changed. And it changed with baby boomers who said, oh, no, we don't have to do that anymore. Now, most of us discovered that later in our careers rather than earlier, but then we get into the Gen X, Gen Y, et cetera, and they come into the workplace with the expectation that information is shared freely, that the organization will invest in them as much as they invest in the organization. So the last 20 years have really been game-changing in terms of how employers have to deal with and treat the people that invest their lives with them.
Any ideas? I know you've got some creative things going on at Grizzard, but what are some tips that some of our listeners may be able to walk away with in terms of opening the doors of communication and being much more fluent in their transmission of knowledge and information?
Well, I think one thing is to at least erase or forget about the barriers that we used to have between life and work. People can't segment themselves as much as they used to in the past. And an associate's concerns or cares about their family or their investments or the sick mother or relative or whatever do not go away when they come in the door. Hmm. And so, you know, in the past, maybe 20 years ago, managers clearly saw that as off limits. You're here to do the job, leave your stuff at the door. No one leaves their stuff at the door anymore. And so one piece of advice or counsel I would give is engage your associates as people. Find out if little Johnny had a good softball game over the weekend because it matters to mom and dad. Find out what's going on in their lives, and not in an intrusive way, but spend some time just talking at the front of a meeting. Do those social kinds of interchanges that break down barriers. And I think that in itself begins to build trust for talking about the important things of work as well as life. Mm.
I like that. And I know for some personalities that's easy, for others that's even more difficult. But it doesn't really matter. The bottom line is that everybody needs to be engaged at that level of communication.
And it doesn't take much. One of the first people that I worked for when I came to Atlanta was a tremendous supervisor, and I would always go into a committee meeting with my agenda. I'm ready to go. You know, Jones is on the Bronco in chute number 3. Let's open the gate and get this meeting going, right? And Marguerite, my supervisor, would always begin with a little bit of chit-chat about the weekend or some familiarizing conversation. And she pulled me aside and she said, you need to learn to slow down a little bit and connect with people at the front of a meeting. It only takes a couple of minutes and your meetings will go so much better than they would have otherwise. And I found that to be true. Take just that minute or two to connect and then get onto the business agenda. It's a simple acknowledgement that the other person matters beyond the agenda of the meeting.
So simple, so dynamic, so impactful.
Yes.
Hey, Gary, I understand recently that you were the recipient of a really special award. Now, I'm not going to ask you to talk about that, about yourself. So we've enlisted Tamara to give some background about this. So this is your opportunity to give us the story here, Tamara.
Well, Gary won a very distinguished award along with Keith Hicks because he was considered by Sherman Lana as exemplifying the highest of professional standards. But I do think that, Gary, you should be talking about what you did.
Well, I think maybe how I got some of the attention that led to the award is we do a cultural survey at Grizzard. And for at least the last 5 years, which gives 2 years of credit to the person before me, so this is not all a Gary story, we had 100% participation in the survey, which is absolutely unheard of in any employee survey. And even more importantly, I think, is that we actually raised our scores to beat professional service firm benchmarks throughout the United States. We raised those scores in about 3 years. And so to me, it was a tremendous story about how Grizzard Communications invests in their people and rewards their people for giving data, giving input, good or bad, so we can learn and grow. And I think some people at Sherm heard about that and some other initiatives, and we're impressed with that.
Well, the story that I heard, Gary, was that when it was announced that you had won this award in San Diego, correct?
The actual award was given here in Atlanta,
okay.
But I think I heard about it when I was in San Diego.
Okay, but then in the ceremony, people stood up, and they applauded.
Well, of course they would applaud.
But it's like everybody knew you. You were their friend. And I just thought that spoke volumes about your ability to connect with people at a very, very broad level.
That was a great moment. No one was more surprised than me at the ovation. You know, because, I mean, there were several hundred people in the room, and I probably could not have named everyone's name. But they all shared the joy and the sense of achievement. It was one of life's greatest moments for me.
You and Tamara both share a very special relationship with Sherm Atlanta. Tell us a little bit about your involvement there and what that means to you.
The Society for Human Resource Management, Atlanta chapter, and the national organization have been very important to me since probably the late 1980s. And as a new human resources professional, I found such great resources for personal development, because within the offerings of SHRM, I found enough to get me going on compensation administration, benefits administration, legal updates, training, development, legal compliance, just so many things that contributed to a new human resource person's career. And it was all so affordable and so accessible that it really made an impact for me. The networking was huge, because this is the chance to share with other professionals in your field, some of whom are at cutting edge levels and others are learning. So you have a chance to both contribute and learn within that context. And, you know, for me, through the years, I've always been active. Recently was asked to be on the board of SHRM Atlanta, which was a tremendous two-year experience working with people like Tamara and others to really lead the chapter into the next level. I guess one of the things that happened that I would also want to highlight, that networking was so significant that over a period of years, I was invited to be a part of the Human Resources Thought Leaders Conference, which is a big annual conference, invitation only, for about 40 or 50 HR professionals. And just the opportunity to learn and grow in that context was worth every moment of investment I've put in SHRM. So the networking, the continuing education, it's made a real difference in my career.
Wow. Any good counsel for HR people who are listening in? Maybe they're new to Atlanta. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, simple. If you want to make your way as an HR professional in Atlanta, join SHRM Atlanta, because the networking is going to do things for you that can really help your career.
That's good counsel. You want to add anything to that, Tamara, Ms. President?
I think you did a fabulous job, and that would be www.shrmatlanta.org.
Oh, well done. So let's transition a little bit. I want to dig a little bit deeper into Gary Jones. I know a little bit scary thought to some, but I know that there is some aspect of who you are in terms of your personal life that makes you the quality person that you are. And I wish you'd talk to us just a little bit. What have been some of the defining moment in your life?
You know, Terry, I have been so blessed throughout my life. I've had a number of defining moments, because one of the things that, you know, I see life as an adventure, and I'm learning and trying to grow all the time. But I'll tell you about one that may be a little bit unusual that did have some impact on me. I've been playing guitar since I was 12. And I remember going into Guitar Center one day, because you just do if you play guitar. You have to go into Guitar Center periodically to just get a fix, right? New equipment, new amps. And I'm walking by, and there's this 12 or 13-year-old kid just tearing it up. And I'm thinking, I can't begin to play like that kid. Maybe I just won't play for a while. You know, because if you can't play like the best, why would you even bother, right? And so about 2 weeks after that, my band had a gig, and we were actually doing some recording, and we hired a professional guitar player, sound technician, to run our board for us that night. And I'm a little nervous playing lead guitar in front of a professional guitar player. And I thought, okay, you know, all I can do is what I can do. And we were playing a particular song by James Taylor, Steamroller Blues, which has a wonderful improvisational guitar part in it. And so, you know, I just feel it building right up to the point that I'm to take the solo, and I'm thinking, come on, do I or do I not? And I played so far over my head on that solo. It's probably one of the best ones I've ever played. And at the end of it, this professional guitarist stood up at the soundboard and applauded and cheered.
Wow.
Now, why was that impactful? Well, the lessons are really much more important than music, and music is just the metaphor. But one of the things I learned is God doesn't expect just the best guitar players to play or the best soloists to play or sing. And if you have a song, you need to let that song out. Don't die with your music still in you, right? So I learned that everyone can learn, everyone can teach, and part of the fun is just expressing the music and helping others express the music too.
Beautiful. Well said.
I'm inspired. Wow.
Great story. I have to tell you, as so many times as has been the case when I'm with you, I want to be a better person.
Thank you.
And thank you so much, Gary Jones, for being here with us today on Inspiration at Work. You have been listening to Gary Jones from the Gazzara Communication Group share his life story and many great insights. Gary, thank you again so much. And thank you, Tamara, for once again being a wonderful co-host. And to all you who are listening, all I can say is go out and you be the most inspiring person that you know today. And I am your host, Terry Barber. Keep on inspiring.
You have been listening to Inspiration at Work on the GII Network with your host, Terry Barber. Find us on the web at www.inspirationboulevard.com and follow us on Twitter at Inspiration Boulevard.